Good evening and welcome to another edition of Haunted Orange County's Paranormal Podcast. My name is Ernie Alonzo and my special co-host this evening is Mr. Ramiro Ramirez, lead investigator for the paranormal docudrama From Beyond, which airs on Mundo's TV. Welcome, Ramiro.
Thanks, Ernie. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come and sit with you guys tonight.
It's great to have you. Hopefully the first of many that we'll be doing together. I want to go ahead and get right into introducing our special guest for this evening, Mr. Ben Hansen. He set up his investigation team to learn about the truth concerning the paranormal. Early in his youth, he acquired a fascination for UFOs and secret government projects. He's been looking for the real-life X-Files ever since, and he decided he would dedicate his career to investigations. After obtaining a bachelor's degree from the University of Utah in sociology and criminology, he went to work for the state of Utah on a county SVU task force. His training and skills later brought him to work as a criminal investigator for the FBI. Although he never found the X-Files, his time serving at the state and federal levels gave him over 6 years of formal experience in investigating a wide range of crimes and national security details. Ben is now the lead investigator for the Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Faked. Ben Hansen, thank you for joining us this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. It's great to have you here. We're going to go ahead and kind of ask you a little bit to tell us a little bit about the show for some of the listeners who haven't had the opportunity to watch the show yet.
Okay.
Kind of tell them a little bit about what the show's all about.
Well, we are, in season 2.5, mm-hmm. just about ready to finish up 2.5. So we've been on for a little bit. And what we do is we look at viral internet videos and photos, and some of these are historic, you know, since the 1920s, mm-hmm. 40s, and some just happened, you know, a couple months ago.
Okay.
So we look at these videos that people say they've captured a paranormal event, and we go out and we try to replicate that video. So it's sort of like Mythbusters combined with Ghost Hunters.
Okay.
And sometimes we're able to replicate it, sometimes we're not, and we find a natural explanation, maybe it was hoaxed, or maybe it's unexplained still, and so we look into that aspect.
Okay. And you also have a criteria for these videos that you watch as a team, right? I've seen that part on the show. You're also sitting around the monitor there. How do you decide which cases you take on and which cases you leave out?
Well, there's a number of factors that go into it, but primarily we try to boil it down to, do we have a compelling video mm-hmm. or photo, and do we have a witness who's available to speak with us? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we have it, but we try to have that. And then do we have experiments that we can do to try and replicate? Because there's great videos out there, you know, but sometimes the experimentation is just impossible to do or not practical.
Okay. Now, I noticed that there is quite a diversity of skill set from the different cast members.
Mm-hmm.
Who is responsible for putting them all together?
For organizing the group?
Yeah, getting everybody all together, yeah.
I formed the team. Originally, at the beginning when the production company was looking to do a show, I had a team together. And the original team members, some of them were not actually the ones that were in our first season.
Okay.
But I met everyone along the way. For example, Bill, I've known for several years. He is our science guy. I mean, this guy has been in the paranormal community for, you know, 20 plus years. Wow. And he works with ghost, new technology and experimentation. That's kind of his thing.
Okay.
We have a photographer. Austin is Lanisha's a photographer. Austin is our stunt guy. Now he's actually an amateur MMA fighter.
Oh wow!
So he's very physical, and he does all the stuff that, you know, where someone might get hurt, because, you know, that's what we pay him to do.
Yeah, so you put him out there. Awesome.
And then we did have a different tech guy the first season. He went off and got married.
Okay.
Went on to some other things, but our tech guy now, Devin, is he's the epitome of the geeky tech guy who's always, you know, online getting the newest stuff.
Yeah.
and up on what he can, you know, add to our show.
Now, do you do a lot of that yourself as well on the internet, on YouTube?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the show started, especially, I was finding all of these videos myself primarily. I left one person out, Jael. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
How could I forget Jael? She was on Destination Truth.
Okay.
So her experience, she was with Current TV. She's a journalist. So she was out in the field you know, reporting on sometimes very dangerous subjects and topics. And then she went to work for Destination Truth, and then we stole her.
Okay. Very nice.
So we do have a couple of questions. I don't know if we can get right to it.
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right. You know what? Well, I did notice in your bio it says you're a big fan of UFOs and, you know, sightings or whatnot. I mean, I know everybody has a fascination and whatnot, but personally, you know, how many of these encounters have you had yourself? Have you seen something
to
that
date? I would say three.
Three.
And I never thought that I would see anything, honestly, because I was, if you want to categorize it as a believer, mm-hmm. I believed in the possibility of it ever before, way before I saw one, and I thought I probably will never see one in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I was in the Caribbean on a cruise with a buddy after working in Florida for the summer. And it was about 2 a.m. And we were laying there on those kind of lawn chairs that I have on the upper deck.
Okay.
And we were with some lady friends that we had just met on board. So it was just all friendly conversation. But we looked up in the sky, and there was this light that was about the size of a satellite. And the one girl pointed out to me, "What's that?"
Mm-hmm.
I was about to say, "Well, it's a satellite," but all of a sudden it started doing S turns.
Oh, wow.
And it just blows you away because everyone's seen satellites, you know, and they know that they don't take 90-degree turns like that. So that was my first experience, and then I've had a couple others where I've seen objects move and cover a distance of like 14 miles in 4 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And some very unusual stuff.
Crazy. Now, that started, when did your fascination for UFOs start? Was that?
Prior to that, it was probably with E.T.
With E.T., yeah. The movie E.T.
I think it's the first movie I remember seeing. My parents took me to the theater to see that. I was fascinated by, you know, like, I wanted to be Elliot. I kind of looked like him as a kid.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be him, and I wanted to be examined with the doctors, and E.T.'s my little friend, and so it was with movies is how I got into it. And then I started clipping out these UFO sightings,
okay. You
know, and taking the newspaper. I made a little folder. I came across it the other day at my parents' house. It amazes me, like, how far I've come since that time and just being interested in it and embarrassed because I didn't want my friends to know mm-hmm. I was into it. And then here I am getting paid to travel the world,
wow,
you know, and to look into these things.
Very nice. There are a lot of, on some of these cases, the amount of, I guess, preparation in mm-hmm. trouble and just, it looks like when you guys, I'm talking about when you guys recreate some of these scenarios that happen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is that as complicated as it looks, or do you guys have a whole other crew that's setting that stuff up for you? Is it actually the team members that are putting all that
together? Well, yes and yes. I mean, it is complicated. And sometimes outright ridiculous, and we know that, but when we get these ideas, some of them come from online,
mm-hmm.
and people are suggesting, well, maybe it was this giant marionette puppet, you know, that someone was controlling,
and
as ridiculous as it sounds, sometimes when we do these experiments, we're able to show them, you know, no, well, there's no way that that's what this was, or look at the complexity we went to build this. And sometimes we do go outside of our team. Of course, we've got to use our resources. I called up, Disneyland actually several months back to talk to them about holograms, and what their suggestions, you know, might be for something. So we have people standing by. We do have some prep, definitely, that goes into our experiments before getting there.
Because
you can imagine, you've seen some of our experiments, and they're pretty complex, and you don't just show up and, you know, like, ta-da.
Just to tie what you mentioned about Disneyland, you know, Ernie and I, we're big Disneyland fans, and we had a nice meeting. We actually had the opportunity to go on the Haunted Mansion, the ride.
Oh, cool.
And even as a kid, when I would go on this ride, I'd be like, I mean, I'm a paranormal investigator. I've had my personal experiences. I've seen apparitions, and I feel that somehow Walt Disney had some sort of either a personal encounter and where he would see these entities and somehow go out and he actually, you know, the replica that he has in the ballroom, you see him dancing with the holograms. It's really awesome. That's just exactly what an apparition kind of like looks like.
The
exactly.
Haunted Mansion is a strange story in itself. I mean, it wasn't completed in his lifetime.
Yeah.
As you know, it was started and then put on hold because the Imagineers didn't know how to finish it with his vision.
Yeah.
And so there's some strange stories. In fact, there's video out there of an apparition that was caught on surveillance camera after the park had closed. You've seen that one?
Yeah, it was like walking out of the Haunted Mansion queue and then kind of walking near the rivers of America, right? Yeah.
And believe me, we've tried. We've tried to, I'm sure many others wanted to do a show or investigation there.
Disney won't let you do anything.
They don't want to risk the negative publicity. Let's say we found that the place was haunted.
Yeah.
How does that affect people who are really superstitious or afraid to go there now?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so they said no.
That's true. Now, the team that works on these recreations and the preparations that go along with them, how long does it take to kind of gear that all up?
Well, in actual film time, this kind of gives you an idea. Domestically, we're out on the road probably about 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to that, though, logistics is so huge. We have a great production team because logistically, all the permits, sometimes we're exploding things up. Sometimes we're flying helicopters or planes really low over areas. So that takes weeks in advance.
I imagine there's a lot of permitting and things with the locations that you're at.
It is. And stuff that, quite honestly, I have no clue how to do.
Yeah.
So I focus on the investigation part.
You know, and now that I want to tie in, you know, a couple of episodes that I have. I'm a big fan of you guys. You know, I have 4 episodes that I saw these episodes. I was just intrigued. I was blown away.
Oh, cool.
One of them, me being Latino, Hispanic, I did see this footage on a show called Primer Impacto. And it was actually the footage of the flying humanoid.
Oh, yes. La Bruja.
Is that the one with the witch, right?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Now, we just went out there. It was awesome just to see you guys, you know, debunk it itself, you know, because, I mean, when I first saw the video, I was just like, somebody out there, you know. The way it was just moving too slow. The way you guys just broke it down and analyzed it or whatnot. What was your final conclusion on this case here?
You know, humanoids, flying humanoids are very strange. It's one of those things that you didn't hear about it maybe until, you know, last couple of years, most people.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, where do I place this? You got UFOs, you got ghosts, and then you got people who are flying around.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was, you know, skeptical. But there are some decent videos out there that seem to show these figures that are flying. This particular video that was shot in Mexico, you know, was shot by a UFO group, you know, so some people might say, well, they either wanted to believe so badly that they passed it off as a flying, you know, witch UFO thing, or or maybe they faked it. But I found them to be credible. I found the lady we interviewed to be very credible. The main component to this particular video was that they were so far away from it, though.
Yeah.
That I think when they zoomed in as close as they did, the object was really still blurry. And I will admit, it takes a certain type of draft. But you sometimes, as a pilot, I know about these kind of air currents. When you come up on a ridge to a mountain, sometimes you'll get a very stable current that comes down the windward or leeward side of a mountain. That's predictable. And what this balloon, it looked like a cluster of balloons, was doing was just being carried along this draft of air in such a way that it looked like it was on this, you know, just straight trajectory. And you don't associate that with balloons.
Yeah. Now, there's a show that you guys just did on Area 51, correct? Now, what was that? Since I know you're very into UFOs, what was that like, getting clearance? Now, you guys couldn't go into Area 51, but just to even shoot around it, was that difficult to
Well,
initiate?
Logistically, the problem is it's still... Do you need to...
Go ahead.
Okay. logistically, it's difficult because it's still very active. The base itself, where I was, is completely outside of the base airspace. It's the only place you can still see down into the airfield. And where Jael and Austin were is actually underlying restricted airspace.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, what are your... So are those actually your favorite types of investigations to go on, the UFO type, or...
I like a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I love doing cases that are really puzzling, though. Yeah. I honestly don't mind if I can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because it intrigues me, you know, further. And I love the historic cases. So whether it's a ghost case or a UFO, I like the ones that others have tried and tried and tried, and then we bring something new to the table.
Yeah. Now, what are some locations that you're looking forward to perhaps tackling in the next season?
Well, we've got some more international travel that people will be seeing. Probably, I think, in the spring is when those are going to start airing. Mm-hmm. And one in particular I really look forward to seeing how people respond is an abduction case of a lady in the UK. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't say alien, and I don't say other entity, because we really don't know what it was or if she was abducted. But without giving away too much, she literally disappears and reappears on camera.
Oh, wow.
It would seem.
Now, can you tell us who was filming this? Was it... No?
Well, it was one of those types of events where someone had some experiences happening before, okay. So they left a camera running to see what they could capture.
Okay.
Well, I know this episode, you guys were actually there at Indiana Cemetery. You guys went out to investigate the Phantom.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Now, I, as an investigator, I've heard different theories that spirits don't hang around cemeteries or whatnot. And I started off in Santa Ana at a local cemetery, Fairhaven.
Mm-hmm.
I actually captured some of the best evidence I actually have in my whole collection. And a lot of Class A's, a lot of shadow figures. And what was it for you to actually investigate the cemetery and go after this Phantom?
Cemetery was like my, I shouldn't say it's the first, because the first experience I had was EVP. This is the first time I've seen objects moving by themselves. And it was creepy. I mean, I tell this story all the time, but between filming and when they're by myself, the others were, you know, eating snacks or something. Jael was, I think, taking a break. And I went into the cemetery by myself, and I stood there because I was hearing footsteps. Every time that I would walk, I would hear something in the tree line, mm-hmm. rustling leaves, and then stop. And I'd walk again and then stop. And I felt as if something were pacing me. And it happened about 5 feet away from me, mm-hmm. In the grass as well. So I got my flashlight out and I bent down on the ground and I literally saw a pile of leaves depressing in the shape of a footprint right in front of my face.
Oh, wow.
And after that, I saw individual leaves that looked like someone had picked them up, mm-hmm. and pulled them and or taken them and turned them upside down and laid them back down. I mean, happening right in front of my face. We captured about three of these events of moving leaves. One of them actually aired on the show.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't my favorite clip of the one moving.
Yeah.
But that was very strange. And that whole episode was generated a lot of talk because I don't get a chance to discuss this much, but some people were saying, well, I think the video itself showed some type of a spider in a web, and that's what they thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
I like that theory. I do.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't have time to cover that on the show. However, if you break the video down, those who know and have seen this, you can see that the apparition light, whatever it is, comes from in front of the guy who's walking in front of the video camera.
Okay.
It comes in front of him, travels past the cameraman, and we did all these calculations and figured out the thing would have had to been traveling probably about 30 miles an hour to move that fast.
Wow.
So it's not an illusion of parallax where you've got something really close to the lens of the camera that's passing by and makes it look like it's moving fast.
Yeah.
in my opinion, I don't think that could be what's happening at all. So it's interesting, though, because we get a lot of response from people who think they just know, you know, and it's like, well.
Now, what do you find? I mean, do you have any way of telling what the viewers, what types of episodes the viewers are more in tune with or digging more, I guess?
Well, I'm sure the network does all that. They love to break things down and see what resonates with people the most.
Yeah,
I personally get a lot of emails from. It seems like the people who are into ghosts only want to see ghosts.
Yeah.
and some of them kind of knock on the UFO stuff, but then I got the UFO guys who are like, "You got to do more UFOs."
Yeah,
we're one of the only shows that still covers the UFO subject.
I noticed that. Yeah.
You've got Ancient Aliens and a couple of the others out there that I think it's much needed, because if you look at the polls and how many people actually believe in the UFO phenomena and how it's exploding at the moment, I think it's very pertinent. So we try to keep a good balance. And you got the cryptozoology stuff. Mm-hmm. So we try to do a bit of everything, and you know, it's like, it's partly about keeping everyone else happy, but you know, we're making a TV show to try and cover things that people want to hear about. But at the same time, we have to stick to our criteria. Well, what's the most compelling video that's out there right now?
Yeah.
You know, like, what can we actually do experiments on right now?
Yeah. And then how has your training as an FBI agent influenced what you do on the show now?
How has it influenced it? Well,
I'm sure you've never gotten that question before.
I feel that I'm much more methodical than what you see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I keep notes, detailed notes on my interviews, on different calculations and things like that you don't actually see break down and into the edit, because we just don't have time to cover it.
Yeah.
So... I do a lot of research too that's not always exciting to watch on TV. You don't want to see some guy like searching Google and looking up the background of people, and it, for whatever reason, it doesn't do good on TV. So, but my FBI background taught me all of that.
Okay,
it's doing the laborious type of stuff and focusing on especially the witnesses. You know, my experience primarily came from interviewing thousands of victims and perpetrators of crimes.
Mm.
And so I like to focus on the human element, especially when you don't have much to go on with, let's say, analyzing a video.
Mm-hmm. Ben, I want to talk a little bit about more about the hauntings that you guys cover on the show. Now, when you go into these cases, do you do anything... to protect yourself as far as spiritually? Have you ever had any problems with things kind of following you home, or any after effects?
Not personally. I've heard of it happening. I'm friends with some of team members on Ghost Hunters International and Ghost Hunters, and Barry from Ghost Hunters International has told me some really creepy stories about them investigating places where in the hotel rooms, they're in separate rooms, and the next morning they tell each other these stories of very similar, almost like he talked about one that was like a lion that like leapt up on their bed, and like they could see this figure of this thing, and they all experienced pretty much the same thing.
Oh, wow.
With me personally, I've been lucky enough, I guess, to not encounter what I felt was anything dark.
Mm-hmm.
If it's dark or demonic, I don't go there.
Okay.
We don't deal with that on our show. I don't think anyone should. But I think what some people are a little confused about is that when you start ghost hunting, everything kind of seems, almost dark and creepy if you don't understand it.
Yeah, exactly.
And my personal belief is that most spirits that you might be dealing with are not of that dark variety, but they might be mischievous.
Yeah.
Just like you have people here on
that
are living who like to play tricks on you and do things. I think the same, of those that entities that might be dead, that sometimes what you're experiencing is just somebody who is either bored,
mm-hmm.
They're just being mischievous, or maybe they're trying to work through something and they're frustrated.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's just my opinion. I have no evidence to back that up.
Okay.
But when you see, you know, objects that start to move, as long as the object's not flying at me and trying to harm me,
yeah,
you know, I don't think they really mean any harm to me personally.
Now, you have been on some international, at some international locations on
mm-hmm.
the show. Are you guys planning on doing a lot more of those?
Oh, yes.
I really enjoy
yes.
watching them, you guys.
Yeah, I love it too, you can imagine. I think as our show gains viewership too, as all shows do, the viewership, it is, you know, a show that's based on ratings equal bigger budget.
Yeah.
You know, so we're able to do bigger things and go to more places internationally. So in the spring, I know that you're going to see some episodes in the UK and hopefully other places in Europe. You know, so if anyone has any videos of anything taking place in Tahiti or something like that, you know, send them to us. We'd love to go there.
So is there a place on the website where they can actually go on and submit videos to you guys?
Yep.
Right?
If you go to www.sci-fi.com/fact or faked,
mm-hmm.
there should be a very pronounced link somewhere there where you can click on it. And there's a place for you to upload videos and photos, I believe, as well. And that will get to us. And we have some people standing by, operators standing by to kind of vet the videos and stuff. And if they're good, they will get to me. You can also send videos to me directly through Twitter, Facebook.
Okay.
But I always caution people, please understand, like, I'm on the road filming a lot,
yeah.
and sometimes my inbox gets flooded.
Oh, yeah.
And I love to respond to every single person. So as long as they understand that and that eventually I'll take a look at the video, feel free to send it. Otherwise, send it to the link. You'll probably get there quicker.
Great. You guys have an upcoming episode that's airing Wednesday, November the 16th, which is tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
From when we tape this. The Old West Haunting and the Freeway Flyer. So I know you can't give us too much details on that episode, but one of the places you guys are headed to or headed out to was Tombstone, Arizona, which
mm-hmm.
I actually took a road trip out there a couple years ago, and it was pretty amazing. We didn't have access, I'm sure, to anything that you guys did. But what can you tell us a little bit about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So spoiler alert for those who don't want to hear it. A lot of people... They get a little put out, I guess, when they have the trailers on Sci-Fi and they tell you where we're going, because
yeah.
they like to sit there and guess. And I've been told that they have drinking games that are built around, you know, like what video are they going to choose or not.
Yeah.
But I guess to level the field, they would have had to have, you know, all their friends like not watch any of the trailers because they tell you where we're going.
Yeah.
So anyways, yes, we do go to Tombstone, Arizona. And we go to the Birdcage Theater. And this place was the... Let's just say this. I had an experience there that almost equals, if not equals, what happened in Indiana.
Oh, wow.
Of something at that theater, because we were allowed access to a certain part that nobody had been allowed to put instrumentation in before.
So you guys were the first team that was actually allowed... To that type of access, you're saying?
To this particular section of it, yes. Many people have been there, and I'm not going to tell you, like, you know, if we verified or not what the others have experienced there, but there's a video that was very interesting that came from the Birdcage Theater, and it has a lot of history. It was a saloon... that Wyatt Earp frequented often,
mm-hmm.
and you know all the kind of cowboys and outlaws of the day would go there because there were prostitutes and singing and dancing and drinking, and it was a mining town. It was open 24/7. There were, I can't remember now, but dozens of I'm just guessing because it's been a while since we did this. I want to say there was something like between 60 or 80 actual murders. And things that happened within the walls there.
Wow.
There's bullet holes in the walls that you can still see. Bullets buried, you know, in the wood. So it was a very violent time. And I'll just say that it might be things going on there still. You have to watch.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, what is one of your favorite locations that you've done here locally in the L.A. Orange County area, since you're from?
I live in Orange County. Yep. Probably the stuff that I do outside of the show has been really cool. I mean, I went to Linda Vista to a convention they do at StuCon, actually, mm-hmm. and was able to see that place is pretty creepy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great places here in LA that people can check out. The UFO stuff, got the battle over LA. Mm-hmm. It's over in Long Beach, where a lot of that took place, and you have the Queen Mary. Now, the Queen Mary, whenever my family comes into town, they want to go there. They want me to take them there. And I'm not a guide of the Queen Mary. I don't really know the special areas like Bill does, who did a documentary on it. But I took my mom and my aunt, my younger brother.
Okay.
It was hilarious because my mom, who, just really got into this just because she watches our show.
Yeah.
She took my tape recorder and she's just like, we got to go do EVPs. We got to go over here. Whatever. She was sneaking into the kitchen and places where I'm sure the public is not supposed to go. I was like, Mom, they're going to kick us out. She's like, there was no one here to tell me I couldn't do it. And so she's dragging my, 70-something-year-old aunt.
Wow.
And they're going around trying to get EVPs. And she's like, I just know there's probably something over here. And then they're asking the questions. And I had an EVP that I got there. It was a full-on British accent of a woman that was several years ago when I was there. And I took them back to the same door where I caught that EVP.
Yeah.
And here's my mom putting on a British accent to try to elicit the ghost to respond. It was funny. You got to know my mom. But there's a lot of good places you can go to in L.A. and Orange County for both ghost hunting and a lot of UFO stuff.
Now, going back to the ghost hunting, now, is it true, I don't know if you experienced this, if other investigative teams have gone in before you, right, into a haunted location and have maybe stirred something up, is that something that happens if another group goes in there and I mean, if a place is investigating over investigated over and over and over again, does that have any kind of effect on the activity, in your opinion?
You mean, like, does it wear it out?
Not wear it out, but
like they pack up and leave.
Change it or increase it, or I don't know. I mean,
well, I've heard. I mean, I have nothing to back this up, but like at Waverly Hills, they were telling us that every time that Halloween comes around and they've got the, I'm confused. I did a convention recently. It was like a place like Waverly Hills, but they do a haunted attraction there for Halloween as well. And they say every time that they put these things up, the animatronics and all of the people coming through, that really excites the activity there. I guess that's a good theory, though. Let's say someone was very hostile and provoking, in one location. If it's an active haunt, I wonder. I don't know. I mean, maybe the spirits that would reside there are all of a sudden angry at the next people that come in. I'm not sure. I personally think that the environment and kind of the tone of the place pretty much stays the same.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, Ben, I do have a question for you. This is a question that I've always asked fellow researchers, whether it's Mark and Debbie or, Aaron and Zach. When you conduct an EVP session, which make and model of a digital recorder do you prefer? Do you, that you found that works the best for you?
My personal recorder is an Olympus. I want to forget the model number, honestly. It's a linear, is it PCM, records like 9 or 10 times the resolution of a CD. So it's like top of the line that most people use to record. If you were a musician and you wanted to lay down a track to not forget it, and that's what you'd use. I think it's like $400, but I don't recommend that people need that. And I've talked to a lot of people that actually suggest using something decent, maybe a $60 digital recorder. And they like those sometimes because they claim that it picks up a lot more of the white noise.
Exactly.
Where, you're seeing a lot of these EVPs produced.
Yeah.
On the other hand, my recorder is very, very sensitive, and And I can set that across the room as long as the people in the room know, you know, to call out when somebody, you know, scratches their head or, you know, swallows hard or something, because it's very sensitive.
Right, right. Awesome. You know, and going back to, I always ask this question because it's always good to get, you know, that, you know, fellow researcher perspective on what they use or whatnot, you know, and what you said. I mean, I've actually, even as a kid, I would always use those analog ones with the little tapes on them.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I have a hard time trying to get those, you know, transferred to digital files. And
well, that's why I captured my first EVP on an old analog. And that allows for a lot of white noise, you know, too. And I really honestly don't know that one's better than another. Mm-hmm. We on the team, our team equipment, we use Sony's, and I just find that the download on that is like some proprietary software that it's really complex, and I don't like it as much. So, I mean, if anyone wants to know what our equipment, we have a link on the show's webpage. You can go there and kind of see what the latest stuff we're using is.
Awesome, awesome. And my last question for you, Ben. I know you did mention, you know, ET being a big factor in you know, you got into the UFOs and or whatnot. I myself, I saw a movie back in 1993 called Fire in the Sky.
Uh-huh, yes.
Great movie. I just wanted to ask you what your perspective. Yeah, of course you've seen it, right?
Oh, I'm really good friends with Travis Walton, actually. The man who was the story was based on.
Wow.
I became friends with him a couple years ago through a mutual friend. He took me to the site where it happened.
Wow.
And he hadn't been there in years. And let me tell you that the guy, you'll never find a more humble, incredible abductee. You know, someone who claims that they've been abducted by aliens. For me, it's kind of like this continuum that of belief. Let's say you only believe in UFOs. Well, let's say then you see one. Well, let's say then, you know, you're more open to the abduction scenario. Well, he brought me further along that because I believe what he says happened is how he perceived of what happened. Now, he will not tell you he knows what it was. That's what I love about Travis.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, I'm absolutely 100% certain it was aliens.
Yeah.
Now, if you listen to his real account, now the movie itself is nothing that happened in the ship is actually what happened. It's very different. You have to read his book.
Okay.
But it's great because Travis is so objective, even about his own experience, that I love that about him, and I believe him.
Awesome.
Now, Ben, are there some locations that are international that you can't use some types of equipment? Because I was reading in a different on one of the websites. Is that true? Some camera, like the FLIR camera, you can't use.
The FLIR camera does use military grade, you know, thermal imaging technology, and there are some countries you can't go into with it. I was told recently. Can't remember who I was talking to, that we were under the perception or we were under the impression that we couldn't take them to the UK.
Yeah.
And I find out later that other people do it all the time. Yeah, it's no big deal. So it's really a thing of getting stopped up in customs and which country allows it and doesn't. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you don't always need a thermal imager, though, but it's great to have one there.
Okay. Have you ever run into any unusual situations when you're dealing with these different countries that you go into, as far as I don't know, it could be anything.
Yeah, this is kind of funny. We went to Australia, and long flight to go look for a mermaid. And
yes.
Austin, oh, bless his heart, he's a great friend of mine. But he's, when he travels, he looks like a thug. He's like, he's got sweatpants on. He's got like this tank top, a beanie, and he'd been sick, right? So he had some sleeping medication to help him sleep, but he, maybe I'm saying too much. I think that he'd taken, his dad had lent him some of his medication to sleep. So whatever. He gets through customs and he's looking like, in Australia, cause I lived there for a year.
Yeah.
They're fit people. But they're not big into weightlifting or anything like that. So he comes, you know, and Austin's an MMA fighter, you know, he's pretty built. He comes through customs and you know, didn't think to declare the medication he had. or anything. And they, he goes through and they swore that he was on steroids. Because to an Australian who sees somebody who's like been working out, they're like, oh, mate, no, you bringing in drugs. And he's like, no, I'm not. And I'd already gone through. So I'm sitting there waiting. I'm like, oh, boy, what does he get stopped up for? And he doesn't do drugs. None of us do.
Yeah.
You know? And anyways, they searched through all of his bags, and I was almost afraid they weren't going to let him into the country.
Nice.
So there's an inside story there. I told him next time we go traveling, he needs to dress a little bit smarter, you know, and, nice. And you know, coming from law enforcement, who wouldn't suspect that this guy was up to something?
Nice. So, Ben, what do we have to look forward to in 2012? Any new surprises or anything very really unusual that's set to air on the upcoming episodes?
Yes, bigger and better. with the case I talked about in the UK, we've got a couple of really cool cases there, plus we're expanding the format of the show.
Okay.
We are looking into things that you wouldn't maybe at first categorize as paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
But
can you give some examples? Or?
Superhuman abilities.
Okay.
That type of thing.
Yeah. Now, have you guys covered any type of religious type phenomenon or miraculous type?
We've been sent videos for sure. Uh-huh. We've reviewed video clips. I'm not sure that exactly which ones have actually aired.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really kind of careful though. For example, you know, just as people's different religious beliefs, you don't want to take them lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we take a case like that, it's got to, you know, we've got to be really particular about it.
I'm thinking about that now as you mention it, what that could present, you
know,
if you were to cover something like that. And
well, religion fits in, you know, great mm-hmm. with the stuff we're doing. And I get asked questions about religion all the time and like whether it conflicts my beliefs or not. I have not found anything that I've done that has like been, you know, surprise to me mm-hmm. that made me question my own beliefs.
Yeah.
If I don't understand it, then I don't understand it, but it still fits into the framework of what I believe, and I figure that I'll know about it later.
Okay, we also have a few questions that were posted on our Facebook page from our fans, of course, or from your fans. And one of them is asking if you are currently in a relationship or if you are married.
I am not married. And I hold the relationship question. I date when I can. I mean, we're very, very busy. I had been on and off in a relationship with someone very special for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so just trying to figure out where we're at right now.
Yeah.
You know, I got to, I guess to use the law enforcement, you know, like euphemism, we got to pull the trigger sometime, you know, and just like get it done. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got that one out of the way. And also, how tall are you? I'm sure.
I'm almost 6'6", 6'5", 3/4".
Okay. Great. Yeah. Great.
And did you play basketball? I did.
Did you play basketball?
That always follows. I played quite a bit, and I like to tell people that I played college ball. I played for my university in Australia when I was there.
Oh, nice.
But then I have to add, you know, like in Australia, it's like a social club. They just do it for fun. It's not like they go there to go play, you know, professional basketball. It's like this activity, you know, so I can tell that or not tell that to people. I think it still sounds cool.
It does sound cool. Now, what do you do for fun aside from going out and debunking all over the world? What do you do for, what does Ben Hansen like to do for fun?
Ooh. Well, right now it takes up practically all my time, but, I live not too far from the beach. I'm trying to learn to surf.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really bad at it. I have this really long board, and I just can't time the waves right. I just don't get it. And it's not a very good place to learn. I got to go, like, down south, you know, towards, you know, Trestles or some of those beaches where the waves are better formed. But anyways, I do that. I rock climb. I'm a firearms instructor.
Oh, really?
So I want to have time and try to put together classes for people who want to, you know, learn that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm toying with the idea of other projects, maybe books or stuff like that. So a lot to keep me busy.
Now, are you, did you also have a pilot's license? Is that, did I catch that?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. God, I guess I didn't mention it because I haven't had time lately to do it, but, I rent a plane occasionally and, what I love about flying is it's all left brained, you know, it's like buttons and switches and, if I was like, let's say, confused, you know, in relationship and all that, you know, drama that comes with it.
Yeah.
I go flying because I just get in. I just get into this mode where like everything's logical and it, it takes care of the problem.
Very nice. Well, I want to ask you about an upcoming event you have in February, the International UFO Congress. Tell us a little bit about that and where that's going to happen.
UFO International Congress is the largest UFO convention, annual convention in the world, so I'm honored that they invited me to speak. It's February 22nd through the 26th or 7th, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And it's near Phoenix. I think it's Fort MacArthur is the name of the casino Indian reservation town that it's being held at. But you have like the world's top researchers and scientists, you know, who are speaking there, and it's very well publicized by the press and covered, you know. So anything that's new and developing is usually reported there. So I'm just honored and really humbled to be able to go there and, you know, stand up and say something that hopefully people want to hear.
Now, are you going to be talking about some of your experiences on the show, or are you going to be talking, what are you going to, what are you
going to present? Exactly? Some of the things that you've seen on the show, some cases I'll go a little more into. Mm-hmm. My topic is about really kind of technology and videos.
Okay.
And how do we know what to believe?
Yeah.
It's kind of like what the show deals with. It's like, is it real or not? Like when we see these things on YouTube, and is it really helping? I mean, like, will people ultimately come to understand UFOs and believe in them through technology? Because we've heard people say, I'll see it when I believe it.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's necessarily true, because people have seen amazing things and tried to just explain them away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even if a UFO landed on the White House lawn and you talk to the occupants and put it on the 10 o'clock news, how many people still will not believe it?
Yeah.
If it doesn't fit your paradigm, you know, it takes a lot of convincing, and I don't know that technology has the ultimate answer. It helps, but so that's what the topic's going to be about.
Wow, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It was a pleasure to have
you.
And it was great meeting you over initially at the, we met in Santa Ana at the Dia de los Altares, right?
And yeah, Dia de los Muertos de los Altares.
Yeah. So again, it was great to meet you, and we're looking forward to sometime probably in December, hopefully doing a meetup where the fans will be able to come out to meet you. And
we'd love that before Christmas, and hopefully we'll have some stuff there that's Factor Fake merchandise and just to meet people and say hi.
That would be great. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us, and for Ernie Alonzo and Romero Ramirez of Haunted Orange County, we thank you for joining us on this edition of Haunted Orange County's Paranormal Podcast.
Thank you.
Good night.